From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. When it comes to period products, tampons are one of the most popular, being used by up to 80% of people here in the United States, which should mean they're safe, right? Well, following a recent study, the answer may be no. According to researchers, toxic metals, including lead and arsenic, have been found in 14 major brands of tampons. And as a result, a lot of people are making the switch to menstrual cups, a shift that Salt, a local business specializing in reusable period products, has seen firsthand. So joining us now to talk more about this issue are Cherie Hager, the CEO of Salt, and Director of Customer Experience, Bridget Lay. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
So Cherie, let me start the conversation with you. I think it's important to point out that experts do not know yet if the metals that were found in these tampons can or are contributing to any negative health effects. However, with that said, this is not exactly news that consumers want to hear. So what I'm interested to know is this. What was your initial reaction when you heard about this study?
So we are in the reusable period care category. So we're not always so attuned to what's happening with tampons. We saw started seeing our sales triple overnight around July 3rd and the week afterwards. Oh. And then we're able to see, you know, what's going on in the disposable category. So it's kind of fun to see that. But what our real reaction was is that nobody's really surprised that these trace amounts of metals were found, right? Because tampons haven't been studied. Tampon manufacturers aren't required to list ingredients in their tampons still by the FDA. So there's so much work to be done. We've really come to expect that these environmental contaminants are in so many of our consumer products, they're almost impossible to get away from. And the best we can really do is limit our exposure to them. So in this study, they did find those trace metals in, you know, 12 of the 16 metals were found in all of the tampon brands. And some were found more in non-organic brands, some were found in organic brands. And really, it should sound the alarm and the awareness that we need and the studies and more information that we need around what we're putting in our bodies and specifically in our period care.
So, you know, Cherie, the thing that just struck me was when you said there's no kind of testing around period products, right? It's not required. Why, in your opinion, is that just so important and such a serious issue? Because there are health implications when you use period products.
Exactly. And really, what it really does is it shines a light in the lack of research that we've had around women's health just in general. So for instance, we've had 60 clinical trials studying the efficacy of Viagra, but the very first study to measure the absorbency of menstrual products and the efficacy of menstrual products just happened last year in 2023. And then the first one to test for metal contaminants and really any environmental contaminants was just released, you know, in July. So what that really shines a light on is the fact that women's health is still being deprioritized in public health research. Mm-hmm. And still you hear that there's twice as much health research funding that goes to diseases that disproportionately affect men over those that affect women. So yes, there's so much work to be done. We're so happy that these studies are happening, but really women are just feeling tired of hearing that our health is deprioritized and want things to change.
Bridget, in your, I'm curious in your role, what you hear from folks who are using your products. Do they have questions around women's health? I mean, are they surprised when they even learn there are options like the period products that you offer?
Yeah, this has been a really fun shift that we've seen since the study came out. Before, reusables were more of a niche category and they were kind of seen as an alternative period care product. Now people are saying, I want a better option. I want a safer solution. How does this thing work? And that's the number one question I guess I get every day is, how does it work? How do I use it? How do I take it out? It's really, there's a bit of a learning curve to using a menstrual cup or disc, but 9 out of 10 people that try our products never go back to disposables.
So, Cherie, for folks who don't know much about Salt, can you tell us a little bit more about your company, how you started it, why you decided to start it?
Yeah, 100%. So we started in 2018, so we're about 6 years old now. And it really started because my husband and I both come from Latin heritage. His mom, my mom is from Argentina, and he was born in Venezuela. His aunt is from Venezuela, and I was speaking to his aunt at the time. And, you know, if anyone knows about Venezuela right now, political instability, high inflation makes for a bad recipe. And she wasn't able to get anything on store shelves. And as I was listening to her story, I started thinking of my five daughters. We have six children and five of them are girls. And I thought, what would I do in that situation if I didn't have access to this disposable supply chain that we've come to rely on? So I started looking into reusable products and was introduced to the menstrual cup for the first time in period underwear. And I couldn't believe that these had been around for so long. I mean, the menstrual cup was invented in 1937, which is not long after the tampon was invented in 1931. That always surprises people. People think it's a modern invention. It's been around for a long time, and it was invented by an American actress named Leona Chalmers. And I always like to tease, you know, why are we still using disposable products that were invented by a man in 1931 versus this reusable product invented by a woman? So there's a rhetorical question for you. But when I discovered it, I thought, oh my goodness, this menstrual cup, it lasts for 10 years. I never have to visit the tampon aisle again. It holds 3 to 4 times more than a tampon. You can wear it for 12 hours. I can't even feel it when it's in. I would forget I was on my period. I just thought, where have these been my whole life? And I started looking at the market and realizing that there weren't really a lot of good US made cups out there and ones that worked well with my anatomy. And so I wrote my husband into helping me design a 3D CAD model with a freelance designer. And we started putting together what I hoped would be the best cup for a mainstream consumer, one that would work really well for beginners. And it took 14 design iterations and we finally pulled the trigger. And, you know, now it's wonderful to see that our cup is, you know, in mass retail, you know, worldwide, and it's been doing so well. And then our period underwear also took 3.5 years to develop. But really, it was about developing really high performing products and quality products to be able to bring more people into the reusable category, because it changed my life.
So, Bridget, how exactly do period cups work?
This is my favorite question because it's what we answer all day long. So really it's quite simple. Period cups sit underneath the cervix and the vaginal canal, so a bit lower than a tampon would. And once they're in place, they're going to catch and collect rather than absorb your menstrual flow. And to put a cup in, you fold it to make it a smaller insertion point, insert it and point towards your tailbone. And once it's fully opened, and it will form a nice seal in the vaginal canal. And this is going to prevent leaking. And like Sheree talked about, when it gets full, depending on the size and heaviness of your flow, it could be a few hours or could be up to 12 hours later. You're going to break that seal, wiggle it down, dump, wash, and reinsert.
Okay. For someone who, you know, has maybe used tampons forever, is it a difficult switch to do this, Bridget? Because I'm sitting here thinking about this being like, okay, I think I could do this, but I don't know.
I think it sounds more daunting than it actually is. It's a bit of a learning curve. We say it takes 1 to 2 cycles to get the hang of it. This may be a bad equivalent, but I think it's like the reusable grocery bag equivalent. It was really hard to not bring a disposable bag back in the day to the grocery store. It took a lot of mental energy. It's like you have to do a little bit more prep work on your end. But once you get the hang of it, it becomes second nature, and it really is a more comfortable option for a lot of people.
The other thing I want to talk about while I have the two of you here is something that your company is incredibly passionate about as well. And this is about reducing period poverty. So first off, Sheree, can you just explain to folks who may not be familiar with that terminology what period poverty is?
Yeah, absolutely. Period poverty is a lack of high quality and safe and reliable period care options. And it affects 62% of the menstruating world. So there's 800 million people with a period around the world. And of those, that means 500 million live in period poverty. And it often causes girls to drop out of school and women to miss work. And I like to tell people, really think about this. So for anyone listening to the show today, let's say you started your period, but you don't have any access to period care. Would you go to school? Would you go to work? Would you feel confident doing what you do every day if you're constantly afraid of leaking out in public? And of course not. No one wants that embarrassment. So when women and girls don't have period care, they start to get resourceful and they use things like banana leaves or old cloth or bits of mattress pad or paper torn from school books, really anything that absorbs to manage their period. And of course, this is unreliable, right? So you start to see school dropout rates skyrocket as soon as a girl hits puberty. And so, for example, in Uganda, there's 91% of girls who are enrolled in primary school, but once you get to secondary school, it drops to 21%. And you have to ask yourself, what happened during those years? Well, it's periods. Periods is what happened. And in rural India, only one in 100 girls reaches the 12th grade. This is so true for so many areas of the world, and right here in the US, because you see so many who also miss school because of poverty, because they're living below the poverty line, or, you know, in our refugee communities, there's so many instances. So when we realize a product that is literally, you know, this big, just this tiny menstrual cup, had the power to keep girls in school and help women provide for their families, it's just something that we knew we had to get behind. And so we actually donate 1% of our annual revenue to donate products to areas with the most need. We help fund scholarships for girls across the world, and then also fund initiatives, environmental sustainability. And so as of just last year, we've actually donated over 100,000 of our products in 50 countries to help solve period poverty.
So I know right now, I'm sure there are people listening who are just, you know, appalled probably that we're talking about periods, or they're feeling kind of, you know, embarrassed that we're talking about periods. And that is because it is still to this day a taboo topic. And I'm curious about from both of you, you know, what can we do to help reduce this stigma? Because I'll tell you, in my own house, I have two boys and they probably know more about periods than they've ever wanted to know about. But I think it's very important that they know it is a regular part of life, that more than half of our population menstruates, and that it's really normal. But I don't think that's the case not just in a lot of households, but within our culture. So I'm curious about, you know, how we reduce this stigma and normalize the fact that, you know, people have periods.
Well, I love hearing that you're speaking to your boys about periods, because that's exactly what we should be doing, right? Progress for periods is not going to happen until we get the men and boys involved in the conversation, number one. Number two, as menstruators ourselves, we need to be the ones who are setting the tone for these conversations, because oftentimes, you know, people will get their cues from us. If we feel uncomfortable talking about periods, talking about reusable period items, right? If we're talking about the innovation, this is why we've lacked in innovation for so long. I like to tease that if men had periods, we would have had better products a long time ago, because it's been literally 100 years with the same products, the same, you know, pads and tampons. And the best we could do is the tampon, you know, or the pad with wings in the 1980s. So we literally put a man on the moon a decade before we got the pad with wings. So innovation is because of the taboos. And so we have to break down these barriers in order to be able to see better products out there and have better conversations. So we feel so passionate about this. And what we can really do is speak to it in a straightforward way, right? We don't have to do it with euphemisms. We don't have to do it in a way that's shocking, but just, you know, speak about your period. I love seeing Gen Z, actually, because I have my 5 daughters, and my oldest daughter, she talks with her boyfriend about when she's on her period. She's like, oh, I'm not feeling so good because I'm on my period. He's like, hey, what can I do to help? These are the conversations we should be happening. So I love seeing the upcoming generation and what they're doing, but we really need to set the tone. We need to set the tone, absolutely. And that gets permission for the other parties to be able to speak with it in openness. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I appreciate both of you taking time to talk with us about this. I mean, it is such a necessary conversation to be having. So thank you both for taking time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.